And welcome into the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Got a great show lined up for you today. And as always, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, how we doing? What's going on?
Sorry, I just muted. Yeah, you sound like Max Headroom. I got to take these off, too. You sound like Max Headroom. You know who Max Headroom is?
Can't say that I do.
Yeah, you can Google him during a break. Doing all right. We got some headphone issues, though.
We do.
What's going on with the headphones? Headphone gremlins.
People are like running off with our headphones in here. We need to put up a sign, like keep the headphones where they're supposed to be.
Like when you talk into these, it's like this fuzzy, like it's like a Jimi Hendrix, you know, like solo.
We'll see if we can't fix that.
But yeah, we'll make it happen, man. We'll make it happen.
That's right. Game six coming up tonight of the NBA Finals. The Milwaukee Bucks at home with an opportunity to close things out tonight against the Phoenix Suns. Michelle Knezovic, we know, pulling hard for the Suns tonight.
I have faith. I still have faith, guys. I really do.
She has
Devin Booker just needs help. Somebody needs to step up. Chris Paul, preferably.
Calling out Chris Paul.
Yeah, Chris Paul needs to play better. DeAndre Ayton, I'd say they need an all-around good performer. Oh, man.
Analysis?
Yeah. I like... During the break, I want you to just put these on and try these.
Okay.
They're amazing.
I'll do it. I'm looking forward to it now. Got me fired up about these headphones. We'll see if the Bucks can close it out tonight. Three in a row for Milwaukee. So it's going pretty well for them so far. We'll see if they can get it done tonight.
Look,
SEC Media
Campbell.
Today. Hey, Elijah Campbell making an appearance in the studio on the live stream as well, as we are every day, streaming live on Twitch, on YouTube, and on Periscope as well. Chase McCabe from Darren Donick and Chase is down in Hoover, Alabama for SEC Media Days coverage. And our SEC Media Days coverage brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket, equipment supplier in Nashville, including gaskets, hoses, and hose fittings, seals, packing, joints, gauges, fire protection, cups, belting, and more. If you need it, they've got it. Make sure you check out our friends at Volunteer Hose and Gasket. And Chase coming up with a lot of interesting tidbits from SEC Media Days, day one of SEC Media Days yesterday. And Tennessee will be speaking today, Josh Heupel and company. He will make his SEC Media Days debut today for the Tennessee Volunteers in day one in Hoover, Alabama. Greg Sankey spoke yesterday, Joe, and spoke for a long time yesterday. And one of the many things that he got into was the COVID concerns heading into this season for the SEC and for college football as a whole, and talked about the 80% mark for vaccinations that teams are shooting for in the SEC. Six of the 14 football teams have reached that 80% mark, and Sankey saying, quote, "That number needs to grow and grow rapidly. We have learned how to manage through a COVID environment, but we do not yet have control of a COVID environment." And now, really just about 6 weeks before college football season in the SEC begins, six of the 14 teams have reached the 80% mark. What did you make of Greg Sankey's comments yesterday, including discussing the possibility that if you run into some COVID issues this year, not going to be a whole lot of moving around. There is, I think, a very, very strong likelihood that games will have to be forfeited at that point if teams run into these issues.
Yeah, he didn't flat out say that's absolutely how they're going to do it, but he strongly suggested it. And basically, the quote is, he was asked about forfeits, and he said, quote, "It's on my mind because what are you going to do to dispose of the game? So they're not going to postpone, they're not going to move stuff around. It's basically on you if you're a team that hasn't reached that threshold. If you do reach that threshold, then, obviously you have less testing. I mean, you can go about your business normally. The whole idea being, of course, that if you are vaccinated, whether you test positive or not, you are protected against the virus. That's the point of the vaccination. So, I mean, I thought Sankey just like Bob Bowlesby did last week, came out pretty strong with this. He said, quote, that number needs to grow and grow rapidly. Vaccines are an important and incredible product of science, not a political football. We need to do our part to support a healthy society. So we know, we know of the six teams, one of them will be Vanderbilt.
That is correct.
Because Vanderbilt students are mandated to be vaccinated. So maybe Vanderbilt could have, you know, there could be some free dubs this year for, you know, for some teams out there in the SEC. You've also, I think Indiana University is, because obviously there's a difference between public and private universities and what you can do, but
sure.
Judge has upheld IU having a vaccine mandate. So we may see more of that as well on the university side of things. I don't know how quickly we might see stuff like that. You know, like you said, we're a few weeks from football season, but we're moving in that direction.
Tennessee on the podium today at SEC Media Days, and we will have audio all day long coming from down in Hoover, Alabama, from Chase McCabe. And looking forward to hearing what Josh Heupel and company have to say today at Tennessee's Day at SEC Media Days. Velus Jones Jr. will be there as well. Alante Taylor will be there for the Volunteers as well. Let's start with Velus Jones Jr. I thought it was pretty big to get him back. We talked about it last year a lot during the year. I thought he was underutilized last year in a pretty big way in Jim Chaney's offense. He found some chemistry towards the end in that offense, but too little too late at that point in the last couple of games. I like Velus Jones Jr., and we've talked about this offense with Josh Heupel. I think certainly in a much better position to succeed than the defense is early on. They actually have some skill guys that are pretty good, at least have the tools to be pretty good. When you talk about a Jalen Hyatt or a Velus Jones Jr., obviously there's some big losses as well. No more Ty Chandler, no more Eric Gray. So running back position is going to be interesting to watch for Tennessee. But Velus Jones Jr., Jalen Hyatt, there are some intriguing pieces to work with for Josh Heupel in year one offensively. And I'm interested, even if early on you can tell that there is much more of a commitment to getting the ball in the hands of your skilled players and just letting them do something with it. Because Jim Chaney was atrocious at that a year ago.
I was going to say, Jim Chaney underutilized Velus Jones and yards and points and intelligence.
First downs, like all that stuff.
The dry erase board where you draw plays. He underutilized a lot of things. You know, there's not a lot. Well, first of all, on the whole SEC Media Days, this is my first one I haven't been to since I've been in Tennessee.
Are you feeling it? Like, do you miss it?
I'm feeling so good about not being there. All due respect to freezing cold ballrooms and droning press conferences all day. Yeah, it's nice to see some people do a little karaoke. But, there's a lot of worthlessness to the whole thing. And you don't want to read too much into any of it. But when players are brought, sometimes that is a comment, right? So now sometimes it's just, you know, the coach chooses like mature players that he thinks would be good. But I looked at Velus Jones going, it's like, okay, well, maybe that's a little bit of a signal that not only is he, you know, a guy Josh Heupel likes in that form, but maybe he plans on using him a lot, which to me makes sense. I agree with you. Like every time he had an opportunity last year, I was like, yeah, there's a guy to get the ball to.
Yeah.
And I do think that's the strength of Tennessee is they've got some skill guys, probably on both sides of the ball, I guess. Like, I mean, I like some of their defensive backs too, but those guys, I mean, I think Hyatt could really take a huge step. I mean, it's all about who's delivering the ball and whether you can find that quarterback to really run the offense the way Josh Heupel wants to. But hey,
they got options.
He does. He's got. I mean, there's no shortage of competition. Some coaches, you know, don't have enough competition in certain positions and they suffer for it. And that's not going to be Josh Heupel's problem at quarterback.
It is not going to be his problem at quarterback. Surely, one out of the four, he can find somebody that can make some plays somewhere down the stretch. But I'm interested to see what it's like today for Josh Heupel. I would imagine you're going to get a lot of questions on COVID. You're going to get a lot of questions on name, image, and likeness. And Heupel specifically, probably going to get a lot of questions on the program, maybe some sanctions coming their way, a lot of talk about the program that he is inheriting and the task that's in front of him. I'm very interested to see what Josh Heupel says, if he really says anything about the state of this program right now. and the different challenges they're going to have to overcome. We know that SEC Media Days for coaches, largely about recruiting, and that's going to be the message that Josh Heupel tries to stay on. But there's no question there's going to be a lot of things coming up today from Josh Heupel that don't really have much to do with the football team itself, have a lot to do with the program that he is inheriting, would be my guess.
The program.
Yes, excuse me, the program.
Yes, that's all right.
Joe is talking in the microphone muted right now. He doesn't even know it.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the second mute today in 10 minutes.
Well, I mean, you got to give me like...
I know, it's a half a mute.
Yeah, like I get some kind of a headphone exception here, right?
Yes, you do.
That's weird. Usually it's the other way around that I leave myself unmuted when I shouldn't. But
that's right.
Yeah, the program.
Yes.
That would have been a funny comment, you know, had it gone through the airwaves.
I hope he uses that term. Do we think that Heupel is a program or program user?
Yeah, I don't think he's a program guy.
I don't think he's a program guy either.
How many program? We know Nick Saban's a program.
Pruitt was definitely a program.
Yeah.
Spurrier back in the day was a program.
Now? Who in the SEC now says program?
Oh, man.
I mean, what
may just be Saban.
Ed O was on there yesterday. What's Ed O? I mean, I don't know.
I don't think he's a program. I think he's just a very strong program.
Program?
Yeah.
More like that?
Yeah.
Okay. So that might be it then. Might be Saban. And hey, Saban stands alone again. But yeah, with Heupel today.
I mean, what is Leach? You never know what's going to come out of his mouth.
Yeah, right. He calls it like a pirate ship. I don't know. But so Heupel talks it. So 10:30 our time is when he's at the podium.
That is correct.
There you go. So. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing I really want this week is for just any of these coaches to say, you know, really against this name, image, likeness thing. Just really, it's really a problem. I don't want these guys getting money.
I just can't wait for a coach to get up there one day and be like, you know what? I just don't think we're going to be very good this year. It's going to be a rough year for us, and it's going to be a building process. So you guys, you're going to have to stick with us for a year.
That'd be nice, yeah. Butch Jones almost did that even when he had good teams, but that was because he was just terrified
trying
of any expectations.
To lower the expectations. It's one thing I don't miss at SEC Media Days. No more Butch Jones. That's fine. You stay over there at Arkansas State. Have a good time, buddy. Hope he does well over there.
When's his Media Day?
I
look forward to that. I can't wait. He's going to have some new phrases.
He's
had a few years to work on these things.
Yes, that is for sure. We're off and running here today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Taking your thoughts in our text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Speaking of the Tennessee Volunteers, what is the most challenging part of the job that Josh Heupel is now taking over? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Day two today of SEC Media Days. The Tennessee Volunteers will be speaking a little bit later today. Josh Heupel and company, his first SEC Media Days as head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. And as we know, Joe Rex Road, this is an interesting spot that Josh Heupel is now in, and he is inheriting a program that, quite frankly, was terrible a year ago. And then you factor in maybe the NCAA repercussions as well from recruiting violations from Jeremy Pruitt and company. This is a very interesting time period for Tennessee football, and we know this. Tennessee football has been struggling to get back to relevance for the last decade plus. This has been one of the low points in the history of this program, and you're trying to find a way to get back to relevancy, just starting in the SEC East and moving on from there. As you look at the situation that Heupel has come into and all the different challenges that he faces, and there are numerous challenges that Josh Heupel now faces, what do you think is the most challenging part of this job for Josh Heupel coming into this situation, given where this program was when Jeremy Pruitt left it?
Well, I think it's recruiting. I mean, I just think, especially because of these circumstances that he comes into, it's hard to really get that momentum going. And I think he's seeing right away that it's not just that, you know, you're going to have a hard time against the top teams, but you've got some other programs that Tennessee has traditionally just kind of brushed aside on the recruiting trail that now are legitimately going after kids and getting some kids that you should get. I mean, look, even right now at this moment, or at least as of a couple days ago, you know, the 24/7 composite rankings, Vanderbilt was number 24. You know,
like, yep.
I mean, Vanderbilt's got some stuff going on. You know, Darren Agoo, the edge rusher from Notre Dame, decommitted from Notre Dame, switched to, you know, to Clark Lee and Vanderbilt. And I'm not sitting here saying Vanderbilt's about to just start beating Tennessee left and right for recruits, but it's another program that has a new coach that has some momentum and has something going, and there's going to be inevitably some, you know, some conflicts with them and some kids that you both want. And like you know, at this point, I don't know that I necessarily love Tennessee in any of these things. So, I mean, they've gotten, you know, they just got a good 4-star receiver out of Memphis. I mean, it's not like they're not doing anything. But you think about how Pruitt recruited, and again, I think Pruitt as a recruiter was absolutely, I think as an evaluator, he's better than Butch Jones. I think Butch Jones, there was some empty calories with Butch Jones. There was also some great players that Butch Jones got, and he built like a really good, talented, you know, 15 and 16 teams. But I think Pruitt was better at evaluating players, probably at developing players, and still you saw the gap. It was early still, but there was still a pretty sizable talent gap between the top of the league and what Tennessee has been. And so now you go through all that stuff and you're trying to recruit to that. I mean, that to me is easily the biggest challenge, getting the talent level where it needs to be.
Well, and I think it's a challenge that maybe even in a normal circumstance I'd be concerned about with Josh Heupel. When you factor in that everything was – quite frankly, going the other way at UCF. I mean, I realize fully that the situation that he inherited at UCF was pretty high standard. I mean, Scott Frost came in, and he turned that program into maybe the top, but certainly, if not the top, one of the top non-Power 5 programs in the entire country. So I think it's important to recognize that when you have these conversations about Josh Heupel, and that's a pretty high bar. But the fact remains, the record was going the wrong way on the field, and the recruiting was going the wrong way in the rankings. So that to me, and we talked about that the day Josh Heupel was hired, that's concerning. And that's concerning, I think, on its face before you factor in all of these other issues that Tennessee has been going through. So I think that is obviously the chief concern for Josh Heupel. Not only can you recruit given the situation you're in, but just how good a recruit are you in general? I think that's a big concern with him moving forward. And if you're him, you've got to find a way to just show some stability with this program. And we can talk about whether or not Josh Heupel is the long-term answer here. I don't think any of us really truly have any idea whether or not he's the long-term answer here at Tennessee right now. But I think the first step for Josh Heupel is find a way to get this program on somewhat of stable ground. And then you can move from there and see if you can get to that next step. But the recruiting to me with Heupel, I think, was a concern even before you factor in all this other stuff with Tennessee.
Yeah. Now, look, if you're a Vols fan, you want to look at things with a little bit more sunshiny perspective. It was a short period of time at UCF.
It was.
Wasn't there long. So you can look at that and say, well, I mean, who knows? I didn't dig in on that whole thing. Maybe there were three or four recruits that – you know, various circumstances happen, and if you add those to the class, it changes things or whatever. But the bottom line is the rankings did go the wrong way. The record went the wrong way. And, I mean, just this is the toughest – this is it. These are the toughest waters to be swimming in college football, in college sports, trying to recruit against other SEC football programs. And I hear you on stability. I agree. I guess my question would be, what is that? What is stability, you know, for Tennessee? Is it, you know, getting just to the point where you get to bowl games consecutively in 2 and 3 years?
That's
in a row?
Start.
I mean,
yes,
you got to do that, right? And I think, you know, I mean, I think he can do that. I mean, I still think he has a lot of resources at his disposal. And again, like from what we've seen of him in terms of handling things, I think it's been good. Is he going to be able to start really getting in there and replenishing the talent pool? I mean, I think for him, some of that is going to have to be what they show on the field this fall. Like, show people. See, look, this is the offense you want to play in, because you're actually going out there and his teams are especially in the few weeks where you're playing inferior opponents, like you're putting 50 points up. You know, it's fun. Yep. You want to show as much as you possibly. And, of course, you know, win any kind of big games you can win. Pittsburgh's a huge game, some of those SEC swing games. I mean, if you can get yourself to like a 6-6 kind of year, 7-5 kind of year this year, that should help.
Yeah.
How much will it help? Does anyone who's has offers from like Alabama, Florida, Georgia, et cetera, give you a look because you did that? I don't know about that, but like right now you got to beat the programs that you have traditionally had no problems beating.
Well, that's why I said last week, I on the field, I think his biggest challenge is really solidifying the quarterback position. Like, you've got to show not only Tennessee fans, but I think recruits more importantly, that you can develop a quarterback, because this last staff didn't have the first clue on how to develop a quarterback. Now, maybe the talent just wasn't there with the last staff, and you've got different options now. Harrison Bailey's still there. You've got Hendon Hooker that's come in. You've got Joe Milton that's come in. Brian Maurer has hung around. So you've got options there at the quarterback position. You've got to find a way to make one of them, from start to finish, number one, look like a better quarterback and improve along the way. But there's got to be, I think, discernible progress of, okay, I feel really good about Josh Heupel and his ability to develop a quarterback, to put a quarterback with whatever their specific skill set is, to put them in the best position to succeed. Because honestly, the last staff had no clue how to do that. I don't really know that the staff before that had much of a clue how to do that. I think Josh Dobbs just bailed him out a lot with his natural ability that he has. So the development of the quarterback position has not been really all that prevalent in Tennessee for a long time. That's got to be something that Josh Heupel really excels at, and I think that's part of the reason you brought him in here, is because you feel like he can do that. That, to me, is the number one challenge for him on the field. I think it's the most important thing on the field as well.
Right, because, I mean, look at Tennessee, you know, men's basketball. I think player development has been a huge part of their recruiting. And it's not that you necessarily wanted to go about it this way if you're Rick Barnes. Early on, he had these classes that people were like, oh, first of all, you hired this guy to retirement, and now he's getting these two stars.
Yeah.
Well, when you get two stars and then they become pros, now you have something to sell. And so they're really taking advantage of that. And that's exactly what Josh Heupel, you start there. I mean, if you can get an elite quarterback in each class, because they know that you're going to get them ready for the NFL. I mean, it's Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. I understand Oklahoma already is one of the powerful teams and they recruit really well. But for example, they just beat out USC for Malachi Nelson, big time, you know, recruit, because Lincoln Riley is known as a quarterback whisperer, right? That's to me the number one hope for Josh Heupel in this program, is that the reputation he gets, and then when you get someone like that, you know, if you get one of those top tier five star, one of the best players at the Elite 11, see, then that kid recruits like crazy for you. That almost always leads to some other commitments in recruiting battles that maybe you don't win otherwise, you know? So you start there. I mean, that to me is the path. I mean, right now, talking about those rankings, you know, 24/7, Vanderbilt's 25th, Tennessee's 40th. Now, look.
It's very early.
It's July 20th. Yeah. Tons is going to change, but, I mean, I'd be interested to know how many times as of SEC media days that Vanderbilt would have ever been ahead of Tennessee in the recruiting rankings. I bet you it's not many.
Probably the James Franklin years. That's probably it.
There you go. Right.
Seriously, that's probably it.
Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, Steve Wiltfong wrote a piece about Vanderbilt basically saying it's been since then, basically a decade since Vanderbilt has had that kind of momentum out there.
Yeah. And speaking of Vanderbilt, we'll hear from a former Vanderbilt quarterback Coming up next, Jordan Rodgers with some interesting thoughts yesterday on name, image, and likeness and how that affects college football. We'll get to that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't miss the first ever Smashville Summer Spectacular presented by Lee Company, featuring something for everyone in the family this Thursday through Sunday. Preds giveaways, ice making seminars, job fairs, Nashville locker room sidewalk sale, photos with the King Clancy Award, which was won in 2021 by Pecorine, and the James Norris Memorial Trophy, which was won in 2020 by Roman Yossi, and much more. It's a free event. Plus, you can enter to win a lower-level half-season tickets and attend any event in person to be eligible. For event details, please visit nationalpredators.com/spectacular for full details on this event. You're not going to want to miss the event coming up this weekend. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. SEC Media Days are underway. Our own Chase McCabe is down in Hoover, Alabama, brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. And yesterday he caught up with former Vanderbilt quarterback Jordan Rodgers, who of course is now an analyst for the SEC Network as well, and got his thoughts on the name, image, and likeness laws now coming into effect in college sports. Here's what former Vanderbilt quarterback Jordan Rodgers had to say about the name, image, and likeness laws now in college athletics.
We're back, ESPN 102.5, The Game. SEC Media Days coverage brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Chase McCabe here on Radio Row with SEC Network, ESPN, and former Vanderbilt quarterback Jordan Rodgers. Let's start with name, image, and likeness. This is something that has really been brewing for a long time, and finally we're at the point where college players are able to profit off of their name, image, and likeness, which I think we all agree is a fair thing. But now how do these schools regulate it? Because it does feel like it's the wild, wild west with things opening up.
It absolutely does. I mean, schools are going to be learning on the fly. Here's my whole stance on this thing. I think there's a lot of hope out there for a lot of players that think they're going to make money. They're not. There is a small handful of players, very small, on every roster that will make thousands of dollars. It's a few guys across the country that will make significant money. Social media will not be the avenue that these players make most money. The national media fans are skewed at how much money these kids are going to make. Regardless, it's worth it. Kids making a couple $100, kids making a couple $1,000 is absolutely worth it. Where these kids are going to make the real money, as we saw with Texas A&M and Isaiah Spiller, Damani Richardson getting paid $10,000 for interviews and for local appearances, that's where the money is going to be made. I don't think as much on social media. I don't think as much with your own brand and apparel. But I tell you what, I love it. I want these kids to make as much money as possible.
How much do you
So that was Jordan Rodgers yesterday at SEC Media Days. What do you think of that, of the idea that all these kids think they're going to come in, they're going to make a lot of money through name, image, and likeness, but in actuality, once we kind of sift through all these things and this becomes a normal part of college athletics, it's going to be a very, very select few that end up making into thousands of dollars. What do you think of that thrown out there by former Vanderbilt quarterback Jordan Rodgers?
Well, I would agree, except, I mean, again, these are like things I can't understand. We've talked about this social media thing, right?
The
study done, like Garantano would have made $130K. I mean, I don't know. I would assume the same thing Jordan said, except that apparently I don't know anything about social media. So is Jordan also
not a big TikToker?
Is Jordan also a boomer like me? Come on, Jordan.
Kind of like, sounded like it there, didn't he?
Young, hip guy. You're supposed to know about social media. I don't know. I do think that in general, big money, I agree. I mean, it's not going to be a lot of people. And again, even when it comes to the, you know, the five-star Jadeveon Clowney, Julio Jones, whoever you want to name, who everybody wants, and Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State are all in on that player, and there's a booster who has a very successful business in each of those towns who says, man, here's $500K to come play here, right? I even think that stuff, like, there will be enough. There are so many in college football disappointing outcomes for big recruits. There's some, like Julio Jones. Everybody was right about him. Derrick Henry, everybody was right about him. But there's going to be a lot of hesitation eventually because a lot of these, you know, players aren't going to pan out like that. But, yeah, I would agree. Like, there's going to be the stars and the national stars, I think, could make crazy money. And then there's a lot of kids who, again, you can make in the thousands. I think in the thousands is going to be possible for a lot of kids because, again, if you do some camps in your hometown –
you're getting pretty close,
summer,
right? Summer,
yeah, right? I mean, you know, do a few card shows, but like major, major money, yeah, I would agree. It's not going to be a big number of athletes.
One thing that I'm interested in and that I've not really seen a lot on, and I'm interested to know the answer to this. You know, we've talked so much about name, image, and likeness. Are they going to be able to sell like their jerseys now and get money off of that?
Well, that's a great point, actually. So there's, I think, the first such deal, Michigan football players have made this deal with the MDN in Ann Arbor.
Okay.
So, yes. Now, the interesting thing there
is that could be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's one of those, that's always been one of those things as we've argued over years about how this needs to happen. You know, you're around any football program covering Michigan State, Drew Stanton was number 5, the quarterback, superstar. I was like, man, all the kids in the crowd are wearing number 5 jerseys. Why is that? And then Javon Ringer becomes the next star at 23. Everyone's wearing the 23.
Go to Neyland Stadium. There sure are a lot of 16 jerseys
walking around. There's some 16s out there, right?
Yeah.
Which, again, in that case, he's fine anyway. But yeah. Still, yeah, that's always been one of those, like, I mean, come on. Like, let them, yeah, put the name on it. I think that's cooler for the fan, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like if you're, you know, if you're a Tennessee fan, you're a 10-year-old Tennessee fan and Joe Milton becomes great this year. I don't even know what the heck number Joe Milton is on the roster.
I don't know.
But whatever, you can put the Milton on the back name on the back of the jersey and it's just like the pros. So but that I think is the first of many kind of things. And it's interesting too. We've kind of seen some of these other not on the jersey front, but like the offensive line for like Arkansas or something. They did like a deal with like a barbecue place, you know. Like
Joe Milton is number 7, by the way.
There you go. So number 7's with the Milton. If David Ubbin is right, and he's clearly going to be the quarterback. But yeah, and then the next thing on the jersey front is, you know, will the schools and players sort of like, what are the schools going to get in and try to broker some of that so they get a cut, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's one of those areas where the players getting paid can directly take away from the schools, which is, I mean, it's going to happen in other areas too.
Well, it's also one of those things where like the school is directly involved, right? Like it's the school's jersey.
Yes,
you're wearing the jersey of the school, so
yes.
There's it's not like they could just get all the money there. Would be my guess.
Right. Exactly. Right. So yeah, I mean, and then we've talked about the whole the apparel deal for the school versus the apparel deal for the, you know, there's going to be some situations with that certainly that come up. But, yeah, there's going to be more. And then the interview thing is really interesting. Like Rogers brought up there, you know, I think it was a recruiting site that is paying some of these guys just to, like, get exclusive information from them and stuff. Now, as someone who, you know, knows the state of media well, I don't think you're going to see a ton of that. Like, you know, I don't think like the Tennesseans going to like
just throwing out cash.
Thousands of bucks to get, you know, exclusives. But here and there, you know, you'll probably see some of that as well.
Maybe we should try that.
Yeah.
Just throw out $500 to somebody. Hey, you going to be starting?
I mean, we could get someone from Vanderbilt, you know, to, you know, who can like promote the show, tweet about the show. I'll pay him a few bucks.
What was it, the Locked On Spartans podcast in Michigan State, and was it the kicker,
Matt Coughlin? He's basically like, yeah, listen to this podcast. I've never listened to it, but I hear it doesn't suck.
Probably
or
doesn't
whatever.
Suck. Yeah, thank you. It's a pretty good endorsement.
Yeah, I got to find out how much you paid him for that.
You do.
But, yeah, why, we got to get into this, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, Vanderbilt football players, we're open for business.
We are.
Exclusive interviews.
Exclusive.
But in seriousness, like, so when you have those situations, the school obviously has always been totally in control of media obligations. Like, you know, so now with that, how can you do that? You can't do that, right? I mean, you have to let them do it.
I mean, like, but are a kid's going to hire like a publicist? Like, what the hell? Well, how's this going to work? They're going to handle their own media appearances?
I mean, the thing about this is, let's remember, like, we cover pro sports too.
Sure.
And it's not, I mean, here and there, you'll have some of these guys will do their own thing. But for the most part, you still go through the team.
You do.
So, I mean,
I mean, PK had his own publicist, but yeah.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, maybe, look.
It's PK Subban, by the way.
Yeah, it's PK Subban. Maybe the quarterback for Ohio State also does too. You know, again, like Terrell Pryor is the one I think about so much because that was such a massive recruiting battle, and he was such a star. He didn't turn out to be the player. Like, there's another example of that, but there's a guy who, like, in this era, probably would have his own publicist and just have his own complete, you know, clothing line and everything. I mean, for some of these guys, it's going to get that big.
Coming up next, there was an interesting addition yesterday to the Monday Night Football broadcast that's going to have people here locally, I think, very interested. We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch. Joe, we've been wondering, at what point was Peyton Manning going to kind of take that next step, maybe get into the broadcasting world a little bit that's been rumored since he retired from the NFL? And it seems like Peyton Manning has decided to at least put his foot in the door and take that step. Announced yesterday from ESPN that both Peyton Manning and Eli Manning are going to be taking part in an alternate Monday Night Football broadcast over the next three seasons. It's going to be called the Monday Night Football Megacast. 10 games a season for the next 3 years. Peyton Manning, Eli Manning will be a part of it. They'll have celebrities and NFL players on there, former NFL players on there. So it sounds like an interesting idea. The actual broadcast team itself of Steve Levy, Brian Greasy, Louis Riddick, Lisa Salters, and John Perry remains the same on the Monday Night Football broadcast that we saw last year. But some alternate options for 10 games this season with Peyton and Eli Manning leading the way on the Monday Night Football Megacast. What do we think of this idea that ESPN has put out there? Do we think that the Peyton and Eli angle of this will be a good one? Will you watch the Monday Night Football Megacast? What do you think all this with Peyton and Eli Manning getting involved at ESPN?
So is this going to be like the national title game when they have coaches in the?
I think so.
Kind of that sort of idea.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be exactly the same, but I think that's the general template.
Not on site, sort of watching it wherever. Were they going to be watching it, like New Orleans or something? Or
I guess.
Archie's house. I mean, will I watch it? Yes, I definitely want to check it out. But I've been intrigued by what Peyton Manning could be as the Monday Night Football, you know, analyst, or as just an analyst.
Well, they were ready to give him the job.
Yeah.
Like that, but the reports were they offered him the job, and he turned it down. But it's interesting now that he's doing this. Now, it's a little bit less of a commitment. You don't have to go traveling around all the time. It's only 10 games rather than the 15 or 16 that you normally do on Monday Night Football. So it's different. But it's interesting that this is how he's kind of breaking his foot in the door. Now, he's done, you know, the Peyton's Places thing on Monday Night Football, which have actually been pretty good. Like, they've been pretty fascinating to watch. I'm interested to see, like, on a broadcast – how this works together. I'll watch for sure.
I'll check it out. I'm not as excited about Eli being involved. I mean, no. Yeah. Sorry, Eli.
He's funny on Twitter
it's
now.
It's kind of like the same thing. That's true. He had a hilarious tweet about Saquon Barkley. And that'll be interesting. You know, brothers, like if it's kind of like that commercial, the ESPN commercial.
Where they're kicking each other?
Where they're like touring ESPN and they're like, yeah.
Pretty good.
You know, that would be good if it's like, you know, if they got some like brotherly inside jokes ripping on each other and stuff, that'll be good. I'm kind of big on, you know, the traditional. You got like a professional broadcaster with, you know, a former athlete, but this is different.
And I think there's going to be a host of some kind.
Okay.
I don't know that it's going to be a broadcaster. I think it's going to be a host of some kind that's not yet been named. We'll see what kind of happens on that front, but I agree. Like, if it's just like Peyton and Eli bringing it in and out of break, I don't know how well that's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
maybe it would. I mean, he's hosted Saturday Night Live, so he can probably do it pretty well.
That was a good episode, too. That was he was good. No, he's always funny in everything he does. I've always wondered, like, how good would he be? You just don't know, like, in that live moment. I mean, again, you know, Tony Romo kind of is the standard setter in terms of just being able to quickly and effectively break down X's and O's, but make it digestible. That's not easy.
Now, I think Peyton Manning would have no problem breaking down the X's and O's. Can he make it digestible would be the question.
Yeah. I would suspect he'd be pretty good. Now, of course, Romo also has that, like, also it's like he's a 9-year-old
little
kid
child
who's so excited
excitement.
About every single play that just happened. Yes. You know? It's an interesting – at times it's kind of annoying.
Did
but
you see
overall,
that pancake block? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I mean, this is interesting. It's also, I mean, it's interesting that they're competing with themselves on this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the ratings all go to the same place. But yeah,
that's true. Yeah, but I mean, I kind of like, you know, announcers who are in a stadium, in the press box, live calling the action. Like, I think I would still trend eventually toward that. But I'm very interested to see what this is like.
Well, and I wonder too, like. It didn't really happen in football all that much. But in other sports, I mean, you've had basically broadcast teams announcing games from home. Like, they did baseball games from home last year. And
you know, it sucked.
It wasn't the same, and it sucked at times. But, I mean, I think that maybe got the wheels turning in people's heads of, all right, well, can you add maybe an at-home element to the broadcast? Like, you've got your traditional broadcast that, number one, I'm happy for Levy, Greasy, and Riddick. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like Steve Levy is my favorite play-by-play guy of all time, but I think he's okay. Like, he's fine. Greasy, he's all right. Lewis Riddick, I think, is phenomenal. And, you know, with the season being what it was last year, for them to actually be able to do Monday Night Football in front of, like, you know, crowds this year, that'll be fun. So I'm looking forward to that. So I'm not going to sit here and just exclusively watch, you know, Peyton and Eli Manning the whole time. But it does give you an intriguing option, and especially, like, if those two get rolling and start breaking down, like, this route that Brady just drew up on the fly or something out there, I think that could be really fascinating to see.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, look, anybody who watched the whatever they call them, like the film room national championship
detail.
Game.
Yeah. Oh, they call that the megacast, too, I think, for the national championship game.
Those are pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, basically you've got – you know, you've got the same feed of the action, but then you have – and they would cut away to the coaches sitting at a round table, but you would have just – I mean, I remember Pat Narduzzi did it one. He was very good. Now he's very entertaining. You know, you got to have entertainment in there too, but being able to really dig in on what you're watching as a coach or as a player, I think that's appealing for a lot of people. And again, Romo, I think, has kind of demonstrated that. You don't. I think there's always been that sort of, you know, make it very simple. You know, you don't need to get all into the nitty gritty. And he's kind of showed that you can get into the nitty gritty, and a lot of people who love football will absolutely eat it up.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Ron, text again. I'd like to know how much money each Manning is getting. I would like to know that too.
Probably be reported.
I haven't seen it yet, but it will probably be at some point be reported. My you know, suspicion is it's a pretty hefty amount. Get those two in there.
Also, my suspicion is they don't need it.
They don't.
They're doing all right. But hey, why not?
Yeah, just get them in there.
cut some of that to Arch Manning. Now he can get paid too.
I'm a little surprised by the Eli part of this. I mean, I don't know. Like, I've always, because of what we've seen from Eli Manning in the media, and granted, he was in New York, and I think tried purposely to be as boring as humanly possible during his playing days. Like, does Eli Manning have the personality to be on TV for 3.5 hours of a football game? I don't know. That's going
to
be interesting.
To your point, funny Twitter account. Maybe this is Eli's coming out party as a funny dude. And what about Cooper? Like, does Cooper have any role here?
I'm sure he'll be on there at some point.
You know, I mean,
they're doing that game show together right now anyway, so I forget
are?
What it's called. Yeah, there's a game show on TV. With Peyton Manning and Cooper Manning are the host.
So, wow, I can't keep up with the Mannings.
Yes.
And Cooper is Arch's dad, right? I just want to make sure I have that right. And Arch's Cooper.
We're not
son.
Talking about Peyton and Eli's and Cooper's dad, Archie Manning. We're talking about Arch, the son.
Arch, who is
the next recruit.
Who is? What are your hopes as a Tennessee fan that he picks the ball?
Not high. Not high.
So here, there
saw
you go.
Saw him throw the ball in a video the other day. I was like, yeah, he's going to end up at Alabama, what Clemson.
Well, let's bring it back around to Tennessee. What if this year they look so good on the field that Arch is like, you know what? That is the offense I want to be in. I want to follow Uncle Peyton's footsteps.
Maybe so.
How much is Uncle Peyton trying to get him there? Is he pushing him?
I don't think so. I think he's probably just letting him do his own thing. I mean, the track record is probably going to end up with Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, would be my guess. You got Archie. You got Eli. I think that's where Cooper was going to go until he got hurt. He's probably going to end up at Ole Miss.
That'd be wild. That's going to be wild.
Arch Manning and Lane Kiffin out there. Be something.
Now, there's some endorsements.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Some Joey Freshwater, you know.
Yeah.
Nightclub.
You talk about name, image, and likeness. Doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter where Arch Manning goes. Like, he'll be fine on that front. I mean, kind of already is fine, but he'll make a lot of money wherever he goes just because of who he is and the name. And honestly, if you watched any video of him,
oh, yeah,
he's really good.
Yeah, he happens to be pretty good at quarterback. He
happens to be pretty good at football.
Crazy how that turns out.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see how that works out. I'm kind of excited about this. I'm glad that ESPN is trying something different. I can tell you this with a pretty high degree of certainty. There's nothing I think that ESPN on Monday Night Football could try that could be worse than the Booger McFarland Boogermobile that they had him scooting around in on the sideline. That was pretty amazing.
You didn't like that, huh?
No.
It was kind of funny.
It was funny. It was just like, it was funny in the wrong way. Like, why are y'all doing this?
It was pretty random. It was pretty random.
He's just scooting around on this little scaffold out there. Oh, they've done some interesting things on Monday Night.
Are you
Football.
Old enough to remember when they tried Dennis Miller in the
booth? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was back in the early days of the Titans.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
See, there's where like my concept of time has been so distorted. Man, like I like Dennis Miller.
Young Robbie Stanley used to think, oh my goodness, Dennis Miller's on this broadcast. It's a big deal. The Titans are playing. How about that? That's how young I was.
Well,
at the time.
It was a big deal. And then it was like after you made like three jokes, it's like you have no more value talking about this game.
You're done.
Like, so anyway, guys, I mean, what's up with these uniforms again, you know? Oh, that was bad.
Was that worse than the Boogermobile? Probably so.
Yeah, it made no sense. Quickly, it made no sense. But they were trying to recapture the Howard Cosell random, you know, wackiness in the booth. And there's only going to be one of those guys ever.
I thought Sean McDonough kind of got the raw end of the deal for Monday Night Football.
And let me tell you, Sean McDonough, to me, he's as good a play-by-play guy as there is. Now, he's going to be one of the top NHL guys,
yep,
right?
He is.
No, Sean McDonough, again, no. Steve Levy's fine.
He's fine.
Sean McDonough's flat out better than him,
yeah,
in my opinion, as a play-by-play announcer. And has done a lot of different things and been great at it. But now that's huge for on the hockey front to me. I think he'll be fantastic.
Frank texting in on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Eli was awesome hosting Saturday Night Live. He's funny. I was not aware that Eli hosted Saturday Night Live, so I'll take your word for it.
Did I miss that one? I think I missed that one. When was that?
I'm sure that he probably did. I mean, he was the Giants quarterback for a long time, but I missed that one.
I did too. Huh. I have to go back and – I mean, it's not like I watch every episode, but we still – watch it, tape it, you know.
Eli Manning and Rihanna, Saturday Night Live, episode season 37, episode 20.
What year?
2012.
Oh, jeez.
So he's still playing.
Wait a minute. When was Peyton Manning's? Was that before Peyton hosted?
I think Peyton's hosted a few times. But it may have been.
Like the Peyton one where he had like the kids, like he's the little...
Pegging the kids with the football,
yeah.
That was a long time ago.
I bet you that was like... less time ago than 2012.
I don't know.
This is going to be a big test of
Saturday Night
my
lives.
Brain.
Yes. Well, the SNL skit from it was a United Way skit.
Yeah.
It was 2013.
Okay.
October 28, 2013.
Still longer ago than I thought, but all right. So I actually got one right.
You did.
Wow, the Eli Lost episode. No kidding. Have you ever seen the Michael Jordan episode?
No, I have not. But that's something.
It's really good. But that was also the heyday of Saturday Night Live. Early 90s.
When we come back, we will get into the Nashville Predators. David Poile has made his thoughts pretty clear on this roster and has also made it pretty clear he doesn't believe that they're in a rebuild. Do we buy that? Do we believe in David Poile's vision for this hockey team? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.